Did you hear about Humpty Dumpty after his partner left him?
No, what happened?
He was really broken up about it.
It's manners.
I'm your husband, host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host, Teresa McElroy.
And you're listening to Schmanners.
It's Extraordinary Etiquette.
For Ordinary Occasions. Hello, my dove.
Hello, dear. You're very proud of that joke, aren't you?
It was really so dumb. Sometimes I just make a joke so dumb that I fall deeply in love with it.
Yeah.
Because it's Humpty Dumpty and he broke it up. Hey, everybody. We're bringing quality content like my terrible dad jokes because... It's Max Fun Drive. It's week one of Max Fun Drive. This is so exciting.
Woot, woot.
Now, I imagine that it's possible that there are some people listening who maybe weren't here for last Max Fun Drive. So we'll get into the details and stuff later, but I wanted to give you a quick rundown right now before we start. So MaximumFun.org, the network that our show is a part of, as well as a lot of other McElroy shows, is a donor-funded network, which means that even though some of our funding comes from advertisers, it's only a small part, and most of the money comes from listeners like you. And so every year, we do a two-week Max Fun Drive in which we encourage listeners to head to MaximumFun.org/donate and consider becoming a monthly donor. You can start as low as $5 a month, and there are rewards at every level. And every level includes, I think we calculated over 200 plus hours of bonus content that you're not going to hear or see anywhere else. So if you're interested in doing that, go ahead and do it right now. Don't wait. MaximumFun.org/donate. And this is a special episode for another reason. We are doing a kind of partnership with Sawbones where we're talking about breakups and heartaches and they're talking about broken heart disease. So if this is an interesting topic to you, make sure you hop on over to Sawbones and check out their episode as well. Now, Teresa, I've never been broken up with because I'm pretty good. That's not true. That's not true at all. I've had my fair share of heartbreak and I've done the heartbreaking. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Oh, this topic. So much fun. I'm so glad we started off with such an upbeat topic for our first Max Fun Drive episode.
Well, here's the thing. We've talked a lot about different, like, wedding-related etiquettes, relationship-related mannerisms, things like that. And it's only fair that we talk about the other side, too.
Listen, there's two sides of that coin. Do you want to hear, I think, the only funny breakup of mine that comes to mind?
Okay.
I believe I was in first or second grade. And I was dating my friend Katie.
You were dating.
We were lowercase d dating, which I think means we walked home from school together and we lived about a block from each other. So we just like hung out all the time. She's still one of my friends to this day. And she, I think we were like watching a movie in class and she put her hand on my knee and I said, I think this is moving too fast. And I broke up with her. And she went home and walked in the front door and looked at her mom and said, Travis Patrick McElroy is dead to me.
Oh, young love.
Indeed. Indeed.
It comes and goes so quickly here.
I know. We were together for 6 years. No, that's not true. It was probably like 3 weeks. If that.
Quote, together as 5-year-olds can be.
I mean, yeah. But listen, hand on the knee? Are you kidding me? Save that for marriage. Okay. So, we're going to talk about breakups, but specifically, you wanted to focus on...
I wanted to focus on broken engagements, because that's really kind of like the height of the drama as far as the contract between two people goes.
And so, you don't feel like you're missing out. We're going to talk a lot about everything. Don't you worry about it. We've got a lot of questions that are going to cover more general breakup, both if you are the either breakup or breakup-y or a friend of that couple. We also had some questions about like friend breakup. So we'll cover the whole gamut.
All right. So like I said, we've talked about a lot of marriage relationship business before. And I say business because for a very long time, history shows that marriages were more like partnerships,
about that a lot in the engagements episode, where it was like there was a lot of social mobility and business arrangements made, like especially, well, always the parents saying, ah, let us join our two families and become more powerful than ever. Or it was like there was a lot of that with like royalty and stuff too,
And another point I want to bring up from history is that for a very long time, the church and the state really had nothing to do with marriage. Marriage was a contract that two people entered in together.
Two families
entered in together, and they kept the church and the state out of it. So basically, the way to be married was to say you were married. But then everyone
figured out how to make money off of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a private contract. And so the idea of an engagement really became the period of this being married before being married. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I do know what you mean. I don't know what you mean.
Okay. Okay. So if marriage was a contract between two people alone, that would be our modern engagement.
Okay.
And now that the church and the state have something each to say about a lot of marriages, then that's the next step after engagement,
okay,
right? So if a marriage broke up before the church and the state had something to say about it, it was just the contract that was broken between those two people.
Right.
Right?
Oh, okay. So then eventually it became like a legal and religious thing where you had to like go through processes.
Right.
Okay.
And before, and now that you have to go through processes, the engagement period is this new contract between two people, right?
So
before
this
escalates to the next level.
This is like, what I'm about to say is one of the least romantic things I've ever said in my life. It's like when we bought our house and we had to like put a down payment down to start the process of like the contracts and the negotiations and inspections and all that stuff before we could sign the paper to actually buy the house.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's engagement in marriage. Dun, 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 dun.
And this isn't to say that before the Victorian era there weren't love matches, because there definitely were. People absolutely fell in love. But the Victorian era in Western culture is where we really start to see the engagement become that contract before finality.
Now, we have seen, whenever we talk about the Victorian era, how big an influence Queen Victoria and Prince Albert had, right?
Mm-hmm.
Theirs was a very loving relationship. Did that have an impact? Was that a thing?
It absolutely did. It was very, the romanticism of marriage was very in vogue.
Yeah.
And so in that way, breaking up of marriage, of engagements, often had a romantic kind of leaning to it, if you know what I mean. So here's the
thing. You don't mean romantic, like sweet, like romantic, like big deal.
Yes, know? Big deal. Okay. Yes.
The romanticism, not a capital R romantic, not little R romantic.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And the breaking of an engagement was really a kind of scandal within society, because this wasn't something that you entered in very lightly. And there were lots of marriage and etiquette manuals that strongly advised to break off an engagement instead of get married, even if you don't like each other.
Wait, so instead of break off the engagement, just go ahead and get married?
No, the other way.
Okay.
Don't get married because... Don't get married if you don't like each other. That's going to be torture. Break off the engagement instead.
So even though it was somewhat scandalous,
yes,
it could be a big deal, it's better than getting married if you don't like each other.
And I think that that's the romanticism coming in, and really the ideal of the love match enters in the picture.
That just seems like such a difference from what I would think would be the case. You know, like, I would expect in etiquette manuals and stuff, especially in, like, the Victorian era, that there would be like, hey, listen, nobody likes each other. It's fine. That's not what this is about.
We do kind of have that stodgy opinion. But, I mean, like you said, Albert and Victoria were very much in love. And so the rest of the English world really wanted to emulate that example. So much so that the New York Fashion Bazaar Book of Etiquette wrote, although a broken engagement is something to deplore, it is not half so deplorable, sad, and lamentable as the miserable marriages which filled the divorce courts with petitioners for release from bondage.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of judgment in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot about, you know thyself and yeah. and understand what you're getting into. Really.
You know what's interesting is it seems to me to be a kind of example of something we talk about on this show a lot, which is it's like the broken engagement, right, is like an immediate, like, sharp scandal, right?
Right.
But then it's done. Whereas right. entering into that unhappy marriage, right, is like, and then you got to deal with this forever. And so it's like, that's a thing that we, you know, where it's like, it's way scarier to, like, say something to someone and say, like, hey, could you please turn that down? Right. And the easiest thing is to just keep going. But then you're stuck in the situation. Right. right? So even though the scarier thing is to take the immediate action, then it's done. As opposed to just, like, sitting there and stewing. Okay.
Right. Now down to the nitty gritty. It was advised by Victorian etiquette manuals that engagements be broken off in writing.
For legal reasons?
No, not necessarily. So it's often a lot easier to compose yourself, say exactly what it is you need to say in writing, and without getting the emotions all stirred up by looking at the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the romance of this time period occurred by letter.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't so strange. And I mean, I have heard of people like, should I break up in a text? Well, no, because that's not the way that a lot of our relationships develop through.
Yeah, so, I see what you're saying.
So that's why writing the letter was advised instead of face to face, because so much of their correspondence
was that way. So was that was the norm.
Yeah.
I also have to imagine, and I'm assuming here, but at that time that, like, hey, let's sit down, just you and I, before they were, like, married was not a thing
you
got to do a lot.
There was, it was expected that there be a chaperone.
Right. And so you probably weren't used to having difficult conversations or conversation at all with the other person. And so, like, you probably had to, of course, where I think now it feels a lot colder and if you've been having in-person conversations with the person the whole time and
exactly.
now you send the text, it's a huge leap back.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, got it.
And so these letters were to be tailored to the sides of relationship. So in this, I'm going to say men and women, because in Victorian era, this is how people would have had their relationship. Women were told that the letter shouldn't even contain the reason why they're breaking off the engagement at all. It should only allude to it being of their own sweet will. So kind of like, it's not you, it's me. I don't really want to be married to you, like, this kind of thing. There's
but
nothing.
I also have to imagine that it's something about, like, no one's making me do this. Like,
sure.
It's not that my parents hate you or that I found someone else.
Exactly.
It's like, I've made this decision.
It's not you, it's me, right? It's not anything else, it's me.
It is them, you know. But hey,
they were encouraged not to say that.
Yes, because I think in any era, no matter how far we come, it's never okay to look at someone and go, hey, we're breaking up because of you.
Well.
What? Wait, hold on.
When men broke off the engagement and wrote this letter, they were supposed to present strong reasons for the breaking off of the engagement. And this is because Victorian etiquette claims that men could do a lot more damage to a woman's reputation than a woman could do to men. So women deserved this explanation. Okay. Like, the reason why I'm ruining your reputation is because our families don't agree, you don't have enough money, you're in the wrong social circle, like all of those things, right?
So that way you could hypothetically explain it in such a way that, like, society wouldn't be like, oh, it's because she's, you know, not great. It's because the circumstances. The circumstances made it not
great. Where, I mean, I guess I also suppose you could be like, you're not attractive. I'm not attracted to you.
I have to imagine that if the dude wrote that, like, everybody would be like, hey, I don't like this guy anymore. I mean, listen, maybe I'm just hoping that was the case, but, like, you would think decorum was, like, I mean, to come up with a good reason and not just be like, because I don't like you anymore.
Right.
You know?
Well, this letter that we're talking about here, the manual's often instructed that the returning letter should be have a calm tone and try not to change the decision of the ex-fiance. But guess what? Nobody did that.
Because who's going to be like, well, what are you going to do? All right, Jerry. Sounds good.
There was lots of pleading going on. And another part of this kind of back and forth was the exchanging and returning of gifts given.
Okay.
And I think that this is where our modern engagement ring comes into play. But in the Victorian era, when you were courting someone, you would often give them gifts to show your, you know, affections, yeah. Right? And these gifts had to be meaningful, but not too meaningful, expensive, but not too expensive. Like, it was this tightrope that you were walking, because should you break up, you had to return these gifts. And so, like,
how did you do that if it's like food? If it's like, hey, I got you a sandwich.
Well,
now return my sandwich.
You wouldn't.
They didn't do like chocolates and candy and stuff?
I mean, I'm certain that they did, but you couldn't return that stuff. The things that people really wanted back were the really intimate things, like photos, love letters, locks of hair.
Yeah, albums, T-shirts they left over at their place. That's my favorite T-shirt, Denise.
Yeah.
Bring it back. I got that at the Styx concert.
And so at this point, if you had an engagement ring, this is one of the things you absolutely had to give it back to the person who bought it.
Okay.
Or gave it to you. Really the only exception for that was if the engagement ring was an heirloom from the wife's side, then the bride kept it.
Yeah.
Kept it.
Obvs. Yeah.
Right.
So it's
but
obvs.
Other than that, you had to give it back, no matter who broke off the engagement.
Okay. Interesting. Because that is a thing now that I think is always kind of up in the air whenever there's a broken engagement of, like, should I ask for it back?
Yeah, and I'll get to that. But this whole giving back of gifts was so scandalous to these Victorians that these same manuals that I'm talking about.
They said, do it at night.
Such as Gems of Deportment, which was written in 1881.
Did it say do it at night?
No.
Oh, okay.
They instructed ladies to only accept impersonable things like flowers and books so that they would be spared the regret of having to give them back if the engagement was broken.
Oh, so like don't accept something that you'll be really excited to get.
Yeah.
Oh, harden your heart. Oh, I know.
So that's the thing between the two people. But there's actually a third person involved in the whole engagement breakup.
Is it me?
No.
Okay.
That's the mother of the bride, the no longer bride.
Yes. Why?
She was the one in charge of breaking the news to friends and family that it was off.
Oh.
Yeah. This kind of comes back today, too.
Why was that? Was that just to make sure that no young people rushed into anything?
Well, no.
Or rushed out of anything, I guess?
It was because the whole breaking off of engagement was considered too much for the actual people involved, like their sensibilities, right? Too much for them to really handle.
Oh, like so they have to go into mourning. And now, sure, kind of that,
something
kind of,
like yeah, that.
Someone else breaks the news.
They were, these Victorians were regarded as highly sensitive creatures, right? So if you broke off the engagement and then you had to talk about it with all your family and your friends,
oh boy,
that could be really rough on you. So someone else was expected to do it.
Not an enviable position.
No. No.
Especially, I bet there was a lot in history of, like, if it was the bride-to-be's decision to break it off, mm-hmm. and then her mom had to tell people, bet there was a lot of strife there. Like, no, you call him. Ah, I don't have to, mother. Look at this book. See where it says? Ah, you got me.
Okay, so that's the Victorian era. Let's talk a little bit about today.
Well, before we do, I want to real quick remind everybody that it's the Max Fun Drive. Now, I mentioned this earlier in the show, but what does it really mean to be donor-supported? What does it mean for us to make money from the Max Fun Drive? Well, for example, one of the things we've been able to do is to hire somebody to help us do research to make sure that we have everything in order. Because here's the thing, you know, life gets in the way. We have a 2-year-old, we do tours, we go to conventions, got business trips, but we don't want to miss episodes because we know that they matter to you. And so we are able now to have somebody help us with that research so we don't have to miss episodes.
And anybody can do a Google search. That's not what we're saying. A research assistant really helps to cross-reference things, find actual places where they're printed, not just somebody's blog that says blah, blah, blah. It takes a lot of time to do really good research.
And if you want to see another, like, leap, go back and listen to, like, well, don't listen too much because they're garbage, but, like, the first 10 episodes of My Brother and Me. Listen to that audio quality. And we have been, like, fighting uphill since then to get the best equipment we can so that it is pleasing to your ears. And that is because we know these shows matter to you. Because every year you come out and support our shows through the Maximum Fun Drive. And not only that, your support allows us to improve the quality of the shows directly. And I will say, it's an exciting time, one, because everybody likes doing a drive with, like, a goal and stuff. But more than that, I love this time of year because you all take to Twitter and other social medias and stuff to talk about how important these shows are to you. And that means the world to me. You know, right now we're sitting in our house, sitting in comfortable chairs, recording in an empty room, more or less. And, you know, we grew up, both Teresa and I, and in our adult lives, doing theater. And, you know, when you stand in front of a crowd and, you know, at the end they clap for you, you're like, ah, what I did mattered to these people. And sometimes it can be easy to forget that when you're just, like, talking to a microphone and then sending it out through a computer. So seeing people say, like, hey, I donated because I love Schwanners and I love my brother and me, and I love the adventure, that means so much to us. But
you know what also means a lot to me? When people show their support even though they can't monetarily join us during Max Fun Drive, if you find that you are unable to make a monetary donation.
And we've all been there.
And yes, we've all been there. That's okay. But you know what we would love? We would love if you would get the word out. Tell people, tweet at people, you know, put it on your social media that these are shows that you love. And if you love something, you show support.
If you love something, don't set it free. Hold it very tight.
Hold it closely.
Hold it so tight. But here's the good news. Well, I guess even better news. Let me sweeten the pot. Not only do you get our gratitude, you also get some rewards. Let me tell you about those rewards. For $5 a month, and frankly, I this is one of my favorite levels because I think it's an absolute steal. And I know that that's a thing that, like, everybody on, like, QVC and NPR and all those three-letter names say. But for just $5 a month, you get over 200 hours of bonus content that you're not going to hear or see anywhere else. We have some video stuff from like my brother and me live shows that you're not going to see, like early live shows you're not going to see anywhere else. And like we did like some riffing over some like educational videos from like, you know, the 30s and 40s you're not going to see anywhere else. And then we also have this year and a couple years ago, our wives, Teresa, Sydney, and Rachel, recorded episodes of My Sister-in-Law, My Sister-in-Law and Me, which are so much funnier.
Which I affectionately call Muslim Slam.
Yes, and they're so much funnier than our actual shows. And then also this year for My Brother and Me, we recorded an audio commentary track for episode 3 of our TV show. For the Adventure Zone, we recorded Honey Heist this year, in which Dad, Griffin, and Justin play bears trying to rob a honey convention, and I DM'd that one. Lots of great stuff, but for Schmanners this year, we did an episode all about superstitions. We did an episode in the past all about farting. It was Lepetamine, right?
Lepetamine,
the fartist. There's a lot of great stuff in there. Let's see. So that's for $5 a month. For $10 a month, you get your choice of a beautiful enamel pin designed by Megan Cott. Our pin this year is a really cool, like, RSVP with, like, you know, the no slash through it, the circle and the slash. That it was Teresa's idea, and it's really great. And there's lots of other ones, too. I don't know why you wouldn't want a Schmanners pin, but there's a pin for other shows, too, or whatever. Then for $20 a month, you get the pin, you get the bonus content, and you get a really cool puzzle with the design that's based off of the view from the Max Fun HQ. For $35 a month, you get the puzzle, you get the pin, you get the bonus content, but you also get this really cool glass mug that's engraved with the rocket logo of Max Fun. And then there's a $50 level and a $100 level and a $200 level. And we know that those are getting pretty up there for a monthly payment. But, you know, just consider going and doing whatever you can and becoming a donor. Oh, and one last thing I want to say before we get back to it. The way that it works is when you go in, a portion of the money you donate every month goes to Max Fund to keep the lights on. It's about like a quarter of your money. But the rest of it goes directly to the shows that you listen to. So when you donate, you're asked which shows you actually listen to. You select those, and that's where your money goes. So if you would like to consider becoming a donor, go to MaximumFun.org/donate. And do it now. Don't think too much about it. Well, do think about it, but don't wait, I mean, because you might forget. So do it now. Be part of the magic. MaximumFun.org/donate. So let's talk about today.
All right. So the rules today are a lot more flexible. First of all, when you break an engagement, you do not have to tell anybody other than your partner, your former partner, why. It's not expected that there be long explanations. And frankly, it's nobody's business.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to let the community know why you decided to break it off. And I think that that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's really great. And it's not always required that the bride give the ring back. Here's the thing. The only personal reasons that a bride would be inclined to give a ring back was if the bride broke the engagement and the ring is not from her side, right, or an heirloom. If the groom broke the engagement and the ring is an heirloom from his family's side. Or, get this, when legal statutes dictate that the ring be returned.
Huh.
So, here's the thing. The legal system is involved in many states, and there are laws in place that dictate if you, what are the conditions for either keeping or giving the ring back, because, the law has gotten involved in the way of this is a contract between two people. And we talked about that earlier. But when there is dispute, the ring is given as is presented as a start of the relationship in good faith.
Yeah. I bet there's a law in those like legal statutes that are like, how much money has been spent to like put down payments on stuff, like what, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, if it comes to this point and you do require legal services, there just has to be some kind of statute in place for dividing up assets, right?
Yeah.
So like you said, down payments, cars, rental agreements, and this ring usually factors into those.
I also bet it gets a lot trickier now because, like, we lived together before we got married. You know, we were sharing a lot of income to pay for stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I bet it gets a lot harder these days for someone to say, like, I paid for that ring. And it's like, well, but I was paying for everything while you saved for that ring. Like,
and you gave it to me.
Right. I bet I bet it's a lot harder for someone to claim, like, I own that ring. And it's like, what are you talking about? We both own the couch. You don't just own this ring.
So it really varies by state. So the state, this is a list of states where no matter what, if you don't get married, you have to give the ring back. This is within the court system. It's Florida, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin.
That's more than I thought it would be.
But there are 50 of them.
Yes, I did know that. Yes, Teresa, I was aware that there were 50 states.
So there's a kind of middle ground.
All nifty. Go on.
Thanks. There's a kind of middle ground that happens when the states have decided that there is an implied conditional gift, right?
Okay.
Which means that if the groom breaks off the engagement, the ring is now the bride's legal property. But if she breaks it off, she has to give the ring back. Okay?
Yes.
And those states are California, Texas, and Washington.
Got it.
And then there's a third option.
All of these laws, by the way, need to be updated to be like the party who.
Instead of course.
He and she. You know? Yeah, listen.
They definitely do. But here's the thing. A lot of states don't actually have special laws. It's up to the judge that oversees the case. Some of these laws can even be so small that they vary county by county within a state that doesn't have a supremely reigning law. But there is one place, one state that has specifically mentioned.
Can I guess?
Okay, go.
Nevada.
No.
Ah.
Close. The law says that whether or not the bride broke off the engagement, legally it is her business whether or not she gives the ring back.
Okay, what state?
Montana.
Oh.
So yeah.
I would have guessed Nevada because all the marriages.
Because all the marriages. I guess not.
Huh.
This is the one on the books that says bride gets to do what they want with
okay.
it.
Okay. Okay, Montana. All right.
Yeah. So for those other states that don't have specific laws, here are the things that the U.S. courts usually consider. Was the ring given as a gift? For example, was it included in Christmas celebrations?
Huh, okay.
Was it included in a birthday celebration?
So if you propose, like, at Christmas, it's trickier.
It gets trickier, yeah.
Okay.
How was the ring presented? Was it
in a cupcake?
Was it part of a display of other gifts? Was it as part of a celebration? Like, all these things really kind of go into it. And how was the ring received? Meaning, like, what did the person who got the ring experience in that time? Was it part of, like, a whole big thing? Was it...
Or did you kind of flip it to him like a quarter?
No. Was it a surprise? Was it something that they picked out together? You know, all of these things.
Oh, okay, yeah. Where I could see, like, if you picked it out together, that's very different from, like, I bought this for you and I'm giving it to you.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So normally, this usually shakes out that engagement rings are seen as gifts. And so it winds up that the recipient of the ring is allowed to keep it if there aren't overarching laws that keep them from doing it. you know?
I think that that makes sense. Let me, I will throw a caveat on here to say, of course, I don't mean this in every case, right? Because, of course, there are special cases and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something about giving jewelry, a ring to your partner, and it being like, and you get to keep this as long as you're mine, that is weird.
I you think know what so I mean? Too.
That like, it seems like it needs to be a gift. Like I said, in most cases, it needs to be a gift, or else it gets into some weird territory for me of like, oh, well, if we're not together anymore, then you don't get to keep, like, then again, I say that. I don't know how I would feel if I was in that circumstance.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know.
This all, you know, comes to say that no one is going to, like, hunt you down and say you guys have to legally figure out what it is you're going to do with this stuff. Because you don't, it doesn't go to court unless you
unless
take
someone
it
takes
there.
It to court. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so yeah, yeah. In any of these places, if you if the two parties, like, solve it by themselves, you can do whatever you decide to do with all of the stuff, including the ring, you know?
Yeah. Hey, do you want to answer some questions?
Sure.
Okay. We got lots of them, which will surprise no one on this episode. This is from Keen. How do you deal with the aftermath of breakups when you and your ex are in the physical space, in the same physical space or social sphere?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, starting off with a
toughie. Yeah, right out the bat. So I think that it is important to for one of the people to vacate the shared space for a little while.
It doesn't have to be permanently. I think it depends on how shared the space is. Because specifically in this question, it says school campus. Like,
no.
No. But I think if it's like, for example, if I break up with person A, right? And person A and I always sit at the same, like, lunch table. I think it's my responsibility to, like, give them some space.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't sit back down with them the next day. Give them some space. But I think if you're both at school together, you there's this thing in theater that's like public isolation. I think that's the what is called of like how to be alone in public, basically. If you've ever seen a kid and like a speech and debate tournament, like practicing against a wall, it's kind of that. Where I think you can both be even in the same room and not be in the same space with each other, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, if you both make the decision of, like, cool, we're not talking right now, you can even be in the same class and have it not be a thing.
Mm-hmm. And this is the same thing with the social circles, right? I never advocate splitting up your friends between the two of you. You can split up time spent with those friends, though. You can keep all your friends and go to brunch with them this week, and next week your ex can go to brunch with them. Like, I think that you don't have to break up with all of your friends just because you've broken up with your partner.
When it comes down to it, when you are giving someone space or time or giving yourself space or time, really what you're doing is giving that person, be it yourself or them, a chance to recontextualize the other person, right? Because if you break up with someone and then you see them, you have been thinking about them in a certain way for a certain amount of time, that's why it's kind of hard to see them, right? Because you're like, oh, every way I know of how to interact with this person, I have to change, right? Mm-hmm. Because now, and even when people want to be friends, even like it can be hard to reset that behavior.
Yeah, because you've formed a habit around this person.
Right. And so really what you're doing is you're giving them a chance to both recontextualize that, but also process their feelings.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's really upset because of the breakup and then they see you the next day, that's a lot to deal. You need to give people time to heal. You know, it's like if you broke a bone, right? You would need to rest. You wouldn't be back out there on the field playing football again the next day. You would take time off so that the bone could heal. I think it's the same way psychologically.
Absolutely.
This next question is from Maris. Is breaking up over text okay if you ask the person whether or not they're okay with doing it over text? So I guess that would be like you saying like, hey, we need to have a conversation. Is it okay if we do it over text? I doubt you would be like, hey, I'm about to break up with you. Is it cool if I do it on here?
I think that this goes back to what we were talking about with the letters. If text was your main form of communication before the breakup, or before the breakup commences, mm-hmm. I think that that's okay. Because if you're not used to having a face-to-face conversation with someone, why would you have to do it just to break up with them?
Yeah.
This kind of, can I ask them to have this conversation?
This is something I run into a lot, because it's tricky to ask, like, to have an important conversation and give someone the opportunity to say no. Because it's like, if you say to me, like, I have something I need to talk to you about, like, of course I want to know what it is. Like, you want to tell, I want you to tell me. So even if I don't really want you to tell me through the medium you're using, I would say it would be better in that circumstance to send it in an email, right? Like, type out your whole feelings about everything and say, the thing is, Maris, one, I would say that a big factor here would be how much, like, what kind of relationship are you actually in? Like, if you've been on 3 or 4 dates with someone, breaking it off via text message, I think, is fine.
Because the investment is low.
Correct.
And we consider text messaging to also be a low stakes investment.
But I also think that when it comes down to it, what you're really talking about is the difference between practicality and an idealism, right? In an ideal world, you would sit down and explain it face-to-face with the person or whatever. But if you need to use text, if you need to use an email, if you need to send a letter, and that's what you need to do, like, I know that I have a lot of trouble confronting people, right? And so, like, in the past, when I've needed to, like, ask for a raise or do something like that, I could express myself better and actually do it via, like, sending a letter or an email, where I couldn't face-to-face.
Right.
You know, so I would say, like, really what it comes down to is examining your own motivations and why you're deciding to use the method you're using. And if it's the right method for the situation, I think it's okay.
All right.
I apparently have very strong feelings about
apparently,
this.
Apparently, you do.
Oh, boy. All right. This is from Tate. What's the best way to respond when someone's sad over a breakup from a relationship that was bad for them?
I think that you can help to comfort a person without condoning the entire situation.
Yeah, I think so too.
I would recommend that you probably wait a little bit, give them some space before you begin to say, well, they weren't really very good for you anyway, that kind of stuff. That we want to comfort. We don't want to escalate anything.
And you also don't want to invalidate, because someone can both be sad over a breakup and the relationship be bad. Like, those two things aren't mutually exclusive, because really someone's experience, you know, is like, they might, you know, miss the comfort of having someone or whatever. And so I think the comforting would come in as like, I'm sorry you feel this way. I'm here for you. Rather than saying something like, don't be sad, this is great. Like, don't invalidate their feelings.
Absolutely.
Let's see. This is from at Project Aeolus. Is it better in the long run to try to be friends after a breakup, or to cut off the relationship completely?
Again, this is a highly personal situation. I have had breakups where it's taken a long time to be able to be friends or even just think of that person as a friend, and other breakups where it was nearly instantaneous.
Yeah.
It really depends on the situation, but I do think it has to be mutual. If you find that you are ready to be friends and the ex isn't, you have to respect that. It brings to mind an episode of Pox and Rec,
uh-huh,
where Leslie and Ben are broken up.
And it's one of the many episodes where they're dealing with the fact that they can't be friends.
Where they're dealing with the fact that it's just too hard for them to be friends again without being more than friends for Ben especially. But Leslie is always pushing and pushing. She wants to hang out with Ben all the time. And this is a really tough thing in their relationship for several episodes. So it has to be mutual.
The thing is a lot of that can be, and I'm not saying this is always the case, but sometimes the motivation for people wanting to be friends with their exes is like, if you break up with someone, it's really tempting to want to be friends with them, to know that it's okay, that they're not mad at you, to know that you're not a bad person because you're still, like, they still like you. That's something for me a lot, that, like, I will have any kind of confrontation or tough conversation with someone and then immediately want some kind of validation from them that they still like me.
Right.
And I think that, like we were talking about with giving space, that can be really unhealthy for the other person of, like, that just isn't how it always works, you know?
And especially if there are still romantic feelings on one side instead of the other, you really need to wait those out and, you know, be able to sort through those feelings before friendship can happen. And when you break up with someone, you give them autonomy over their own timeline.
Yes.
You have no way to say you have to be okay with this right now. That is not the way that this works.
I also think, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the recontextualizing of, like, if you're hoping to be friends with an ex, rather than, like, if you guys used to hang out for hours and hours and hours, this time just ask them to grab coffee in a public place, you know, hang out for like 20-30 minutes.
Something very low stakes.
Right. And then do that again sometimes later. But you can't be like, I want to get back to where we were, but just as friends. And say, like, no, you need to set up new processes and new procedures when you hang out with each other. You know what? Before, we have lots more questions and we'll do them. But first, Teresa, can you tell me what's so special about MaximumFun.org?
Well, I think that the most special thing that happens is when people who love podcasts get together, they create a kind of like family atmosphere. And Max Fun really does this very, very well. People come together over their mutual love of these shows and they show their support. They support each other. They find new shows that they like. This Max Fun fam that we've created is something that is just an awesome thing to join. And the way that you join is you love Max Fun podcasts.
Step one.
Step two is you show your support by pledging a small donation every month.
Yeah, you can start as low as $5 a month, which is like 1/3 of a movie ticket or one coffee drink a month. And in doing so, you get all kinds of bonus content and positive feelings, and it's great. There's other levels too. You can go to MaximumFun.org/donate and check those out. And you know what? It would just be great. We sure would appreciate it. MaximumFun.org/donate. But I also wanted to tell everyone about Max Fun Meetup Day. So if you go to MaximumFun.org/meetups2019, you can see a list of meetups all over the place. There's some in Canada, one in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec. There's one in Denmark, England, all over the place, and a bunch in the United States, including my and Teresa's home city of Cincinnati. That's going to be on Tuesday at The Rook. Tuesday the 26th? Yes, Tuesday the 26th at 7 p.m. local time. Ours is at The Rook here in Cincinnati. It's like a board game bar. I'm going to be there. So if you want to come and say hi to me and see some other Max Funsters, do that. Like I said, MaximumFun.org/meetups with an S. 2019. And one last time, I just wanted to say, well, it's not the last time, I'm going to say it again at the end of the episode, but consider going to MaximumFun.org/donate and becoming a donor right now. Why not this year? And you know what? Maybe you're already a donor. If so, thank you. But maybe this is the year to upgrade your donations. Maybe you got a raise. Maybe you're, you know, feeling especially generous this year. Maybe you started listening to more shows. Maybe Max Fun has become an even bigger part of your life. Well, this is the perfect time to upgrade, because when you upgrade, you get the same rewards that everyone else gets for becoming a new donor. Same MaximumFun.org/donate. You can upgrade there. And you know what? Just as a reminder, because I always like to throw this in, it's also a great time to update your credit card information.
Yes.
Because, you know, credit cards expire, addresses change, stuff like that, and we forget to update it on the website, and we lose some donations every year.
So, yeah, so you may already be a Max Fun donor, and your credit card information changed, and so now this is the time to update it.
So, yeah, consider updating your stuff, upgrading your donation, joining MaximumFun.org/donate, and I'll see you at the meetup. And now, more questions. This is from Caitlin. How best can you be a supportive friend when someone you know is going through a breakup?
I think it's just about filling the time gap. When people are in a relationship, they spend a lot of time together. And so that time can feel very empty for
that's
a person.
A good one. Yeah.
So if you want to show your support, be there for them, be physically there. You don't even have to do anything. Don't have to say anything. Just come over and watch a movie with them.
Just be there.
You know, be physically there for them. Fill that time so that they're not alone.
If it were me, this is where we start to get into a little bit of like, Teresa and I aren't psychologist experts, aren't therapists, aren't trained professionals. So the advice I'm about to give is what I would do. Not what I'm saying you should do. But if it were me, I think that in the past, I've tried to be like a distracting friend. And I think I'd rather be now a friend who says, talk to me, right? Help process, help discuss. Because that's the other thing. I also used to be the friend who would say like, here's how you should feel. Don't be down. Be like this. It's going to be okay. All of that stuff. But that's me telling them how to feel rather than letting them tell me how they feel and what they need. Let your friend tell you what they need, basically. You know, say, hey, what can I do for you? I'm here. Do you just want to, like, watch a movie? Cool, I'm here for that. Instead of saying, I know what you need. I'm going to take you to this place and I'm going to tell you how to feel. Instead, let them tell you what they need.
Love it.
That's what I would do. This is from Brandon. How do I tell a person I'm not in a position in my life to date without it sounding like a cop-out?
I think it's about the way that you say it, the presentation, the and the way that you focus on the I statements, right? I really enjoy this new business, the time I spend with my new business right now, and I can't make a commitment to anything else, or making it so that you can talk about the things that are occupying the time so that you don't feel like, well, it's just not the right time. Maybe come back later. Sometimes that's not what you mean.
Yeah. That's a thing of like that, you know, I just don't know if right now. Instead say like, this isn't what I want. Because here's the thing. Once again, I think that what you're looking for whenever you, on some level, and maybe this is just me, but I don't think it is. Mm-mm. On some level, when you are explaining your reasons for breaking up with someone, what you really deep down hope they'll say is like, yeah, that totally makes sense. You're a great person. And like, that's not always going to happen. You know what I mean? So like, you're not always going to be able to explain it in such a way. So instead, I think it's better just to be honest and direct while still like managing someone's feelings, you know, keeping that in mind. But I think human beings have a tendency to like hedge their explanations to make it sound not so serious and not so blunt, and say like, and you know what, maybe, nope, don't do that.
Don't
say
do
like,
that.
There is no place in my life right now. I am not a place in my life. This isn't right. You know, like it wouldn't be right for you. And I can't put you first, that kind of thing, rather than saying like, and you know, if we see each other again, maybe, who knows, blah, blah, blah.
What was that movie that you love with the book and the writing, John Cusack thing?
Huh. That movie with the Serendipity.
Yes.
I wouldn't say I love Serendipity. Well, I wouldn't say
you love it.
No, I would say there was a time in my life where I needed romantic comedies because I didn't have you and I needed to fill the...
Oh, my God.
No, I'm fine. This question is from Nush. Is there a way to break off a friendship?
There is.
Change your name.
No. But you need to be prepared for several friendships to end if this is what you want.
I think it's so much trickier to end a friendship than like a dating romantic relationship.
Yes.
Because a romantic relationship can often be like yes or no, right? Like not saying all the time, but most of the time if you're thinking about it in terms of like either we are together
or we are not.
Where friendship can be so much more, there's so many more like levels to it. And like, for example, I would never advocate for like ghosting out of like a romantic relationship, but there are certain levels of friendship where I would say like, you know, just stop making plans with that person. It's fine.
Right. If it's a very casual friendship, right. I don't think that, and you're doing a lot of the let's get togethering.
Yeah.
If you just stop including them in the let's get together, then you effectively can end that relationship.
Right. And like I said, not in every level, but right. If it's like, oh, I keep seeing them at this thing, like, okay, well, don't see them at that thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
but if it's a really personal relationship that you have with someone, I think that you really do have to treat it like a breakup and say, I cannot handle this relationship as it stands anymore. I need to not see you. I need us to find other places, other people to be around. And you need to be prepared to let go of maybe a couple other friendships in that friendship circle, because you can't force someone to be your friend. And if you break up with one of your friends, your other friends might not want to break up with them. So they will continue to invite them to things or, you know, hang out with them at different points. And if you do not want to be with that person, you won't be able to go to those things.
And I would also, once again, not negating anyone's feelings. If you need to stop spending time with someone, I trust your judgment on that. But I also think it's very important in any relationship, be it romantic, be it familial, be it friendship, whatever. Communication is very important. And like, is there something that this person is doing that they could maybe stop doing if you communicated to them? Like I am one of my best friends who I love so much. My friend Bradbury, like one day said like, hey, and this is when I was like 23, 24. He was like, your first impulse when you meet someone is to kind of like make jokes about them and like kind of pick on one a little bit. And I know you're trying to be friendly, but it makes you seem like a jerk. And like, it changed my behavior, right? Because like, here is this thing that people, like, I didn't want people to think I was a jerk. I had no idea. I thought we were all just like, you know, playfully ribbing each other. And it opened my eyes. And I've been working since then to change that behavior. And I'm not saying that it's anybody's responsibility to like take on the emotional labor of fixing someone. But if the relationship is worth it to you, maybe consider saying something before you don't. That also then provides of like, hey, I've talked to you about this before and it hasn't changed. I just think we need to spend some time apart, you know?
Yep.
This is from Big Duck Energy, which is such, so good. How do you handle things when the breakup was between two people you are friends with?
I think that we're coming around full circle here. I think that it may be the best thing that I would want would be to spend time with them separately. And if you don't want to take sides, spend time with each of them separately. Really let them know that you're still friends, even though things didn't work out. And I mean, you might have to see movies twice. Who knows?
And I also think it's tricky in this situation because it's so easy when you're mutual to become a sounding board of like, and another thing about that person, because you both know them. Mm-hmm. And I think in that circumstance, say something like, I don't want to make our time together about them. I want to make it about us. Tell me what you need. How are you? Like, right. Don't let them position you in between. If you want to spend time with these people, and if they can't not do that, I also think it's okay to say, like, listen, I love both of you. You are both my friends. If I can't be friends with both of you, then I need to step away until you're ready, like, for me to be friends with both of you. Yeah. Don't let them make you take a side. That's unfair to you.
Agreed.
One last question here. This is from Allie. How long after someone's breakup should you wait to ask them out?
I don't know if it has to do with really a time thing. I think you have to find out if they are ready to move on. Like you said, Travis, the idea of like recontextualizing how you feel around people has to do with also recontextualizing how you feel about romantic relationships.
Yeah. I also think it's very important that you don't do this. Don't become friends and comfort that person with the intention of, I'm going to make them fall in love with me now that they're single. That's bad. I think if you want to date this person, and you, especially if you already have some kind of relationship with them, I think it is okay to make your intention known and say, I don't want to step on any toes and I don't want to rush you into anything that you're not ready for, but I would like to ask you out when you are ready, right? And then they know how you feel, and if they are interested and if they are ready, they will let you know. But I think doing the like, I'm going to get close to them and then wait for my opportunity to strike. No. That's bad. That's because then you're...
That feels like a romantic comedy, doesn't it?
Right. But it's that false pretenses. No. And listen, I say this because younger Travis totally would have done it. But as I've mentioned previously in this episode, younger Travis, kind of a jerk. So don't do it. You know, I think this is one of those things of like, rather than, because that's another, you know, we talk about romantic comedy, like The Signal, you'll know. No.
Doesn't exist.
Communication. Say like, hey, I know you're going through a breakup right now and I don't want to rush you, but I have feelings for you and I would like to ask you out when, and I'm here when you're ready. That's it. And then don't keep pressuring them. No pressure in general. Pressure is bad. So that's going to do it for us. We mentioned at the beginning, research person. We want to say a special thank you to Alex, who helped us research this episode. We want to say a special thank you to all of our donors, all Max Fund donors, whether you support Schmainers or not. But I have to assume, if you're hearing my voice right now, hopefully you are a donor who supports Max Fund. You get it.
Or you soon will be.
Or you soon will be by going to MaximumFund.org/donate. And I want to remind you again that our sister show, Sawbones, is doing an episode about broken heart disease, which is an excellent pairing. This is the dark chocolate and red wine pairing of Max Fund Drive. So make sure you go check that out. Thank you. I don't know. What else do we say?
We always thank Brent Brentelfloss Black for writing our theme music, which is available as a ringtone where those are found. We like to thank Kayla M. Wassel for our Twitter thumbnail art. You can find us on Twitter at SchmannersCast. We like to thank Keely Weiss Photography for taking a beautiful photograph of us that we use as the cover for our fan-run Facebook group, Schmanners Fanners. Go ahead and join that group if you like to give and get excellent advice from other Schmannerly listeners.
And I think that's going to do it for us. MaximumFund.org/donate. And join us again next time.
No RSVP required.
You've been listening to Schmanners.
Manner Schmanners. Get it.
MaximumFun.org. comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.